Radio. FOA. Welcome to the war room.
Stop,
we got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Box Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
All right, what's up, good people? It's Thursday, May 3rd, 2012, and it's time to talk some sports. You're once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and sitting at the table with me in the War Room, as usual, is my man Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, Paul Johnson, and Akil Bayon. Tonight, we'll be talking about Bountygate, Junior Seau, the NBA playoffs, and much more. Of course, we want to hear from you guys tonight, so join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call into the show and talk to us directly on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. We want to say what's up to our radio family real quick, so be sure to check out Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio, and follow those guys on Twitter at the BS Line. Check out Brandon and Chris on Sports Trap Radio every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Time on ueradiolive.com. Man, like we always say, that man Brandon is the hardest working man in sports, and last week was evidence to why we say that. Last week, he made time to write 13 pre-draft preview articles. He co-hosted with us for 2 hours on Thursday. He hosted his own show for 4 hours on Saturday and wrote 2 more draft articles during the draft over the weekend. And I'm pretty sure he did much more that we aren't even aware of. So shout out to that brother for all the help he gave us last week and for his passion and drive in this industry. So be sure to support the effort. But right now, y'all know what time it is. It's birthday time.
My birthday, yay!
What's up, fellas? Y'all ready to do this tonight?
Yes, sir.
I was born this way.
All right. Well, birthdays, of course, are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon. That's 9221 Oxon Hill Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. You can dial them up at 301-839-4472 and ask for Lisa. If your hair looking bad, you need to hurry up and do that quickly. All right. Our first birthday for the night is one Mr. Joseph Addai.
Happy birthday. Yay!
Joseph Addai turns 29 tonight. Austin, what do you think of when you think of Mr. Joseph Addai?
I used to not like him because he came after one of my favorite running backs of all time, Edgerrin James. But Joseph Addai is a quality, all-around, modern-day running back. And he's crafted a good career. Happy birthday to him. Shout out.
Yeah, he's held down my fantasy team a few times. But he came out the gate pretty fast. He was a really good running back. I think the head injuries kind of slowed him down a little bit. I don't know if it had a physical effect on him. You know, it may just be a mental thing. Like, he may be afraid to get hit the way he got hit when he got injured because he just doesn't seem like the same back. But he is reliable down near the goal line. You know, you give him the ball down there, and most of the time he's going to punch it in. Kill, what do you think of when you think of Joseph Addai?
Kind of like Brad. Like, I feel like he's all right, but he's not real. in comparison to Edgerrin James, I mean, you know, Joseph Addai, right place, right time. I mean, he was all right, but, you know, he wasn't as talented as Edgerrin James. He helped them get a Super Bowl ring, but, you know, the community and the staff at for the Colts felt so great about Edgerrin that they sent him a ring anyway, even after the fact. So.
Yeah, that's that. Edgerrin is just a light dude everywhere. I was down in the vaunted, famous Miami Hurricanes weight room, and walking around there, they have a meeting room named after him, like the Edgerrin James meeting room. I don't know if it's for like running backs or it's for the offense, but his name was on the door. Jimmy, what do you think of? You think of Joseph Addai? We talking about Edgerrin James.
The Edgerrin James meeting room is where they roll up that strong. But, yo, Joseph Addai, is a you know, he's a good running back for a short spurt, but then again, it's the typical running back lifespan is only but so many years. But you know, before all the head injuries, he was a beast. There's nothing more you can say about him. After the head injuries, he's not a beast. So you got pre-beast, beast, and non-beast.
That's
whole
funny.
NFL career right there.
Head injuries is going to have a, you know, a lot. It's going to get a lot of airtime on the show tonight. It's the big thing this week in sports. So we're going to move on to the next birthday. This is a hometown favorite, one Mr. Ronald Jeffrey, better known as Ron Hextall, turns 48 today.
My birthday, yay!
Jimmy, what do you think of? You think of Ron Hextall?
I won't lie to the people and make them believe that I'm a huge hockey fan. But with that being said, I've been a huge Flyers fan my entire life, and he's one of the more notable players, along with Eric Lindros, in my lifetime.
Right.
So shout out to him on his birthday, because Ron Hextall, as a kid, was the goaltender, but also one of the best players on the Flyers. And you know,
I don't know if you remember. I think he was like the first goalie to score, like, you know, when the other team pulled their goalie and have an empty net. He was like the first person to do that in the regular season and in the postseason. So, you know, Ron Hextall, he wasn't back in the day with the original bullies, but, you know,
he
came
like
along
Bobby
at the time when they were still trying to emulate those guys. So
coming up,
you know,
in our time,
was
bullying.
He was a bully, like you said, in our time. He wasn't with the originals, but, you know, they were still taking people out because they were trying to live up to that hype from the old-time Flyers. Kill, what do you think of? You think Ron Hextall?
Yo, I always wanted to get a Ron Hextall jersey, but I never got one. he was a beast goalie for the Flyers. Like you said, I remember that time where they showed him scoring from his own end. It seemed like the puck was just, like, going forever, like, just going and going and going. And he went after a tough guy, Chris Chelios, when they played the Red Wings one time. Chris Chelios, who's a bully, did something, and then he put a hit on Brian Pop, and then Hextall went out to go chase him, like, yo, cuz, like, what's wrong with you? So
yeah, that's crazy, because the Flyers actually got scored on like that the other night, and they pulled the goalie. I mean, with Brizgalov, it really don't matter. It seemed like the goalie pulled all game most of the time. So. But
yo,
he played a pretty good game.
We don't never have a goalie.
For most of the time, he played a pretty good game the other night, but then, you know, it all fell apart. Austin, you got something on Hextall?
Nah, not really. Like Jimmy said, I'm not going to front like I'm a huge hockey fan, but I do like the fact that the Flyers are synonymous with a Philadelphia attitude, which is hard work, and we will beat you to F up. And that's what I think of.
Hey, yo,
his son
was drafted by the Phoenix Coyotes. His son was just drafted by the Phoenix Coyotes in the sixth round in 08.
Get it from his poppy. All right, so happy birthday to Ron Hextall, Philly legend. Next birthday is one Mr. Jeffrey John, better known to you people as Jeff Hornacek.
My birthday, yay!
Horny turns 49 today. Austin, what do you think of? You think of Jeff Hornacek?
Yo, I automatically overrate him because he was a Sixer, and I grew up, like, watching him. So, yo, he's nice, and he shouldn't get into the Hall of Fame, but if he was on the ballot, I would vote for him just because.
Oh!
I'm like, I'm wondering why you even brought the words Hall of Fame up.
Yo, man, let me tell you real quick what I think of when I think of that young man. I think of Jeff Hornacek, Tim Perry, and Andrew Lang. And, Dev, you know exactly why those three names are synonymous with each other.
Chuck Barkley.
Those three guys were traded to Philadelphia for my like childhood favorite Sixer of all time, which was Chuck Barkley. So I kind of don't like him because of that.
That's what I was about to say. Austin likes the dude. Like, I kind of dislike the dude because he represented the next 12 years of
Chuck
having his success going away.
Best season ever. Like, you know what I'm saying? In 92. He represents Chuck leaving and then losing weight and starting to, like, tear the league apart.
He represented the demise of the Sixers until Larry Brown and Allen Iverson got there. So, the hell with him. But
yeah, and he's irritated. He's rubbing his face when he took foul shots. His fruitcake.
Yeah, that was nasty. He had a nice J. He had one of the best J's of all time.
Yeah, maybe.
But do y'all remember when Jerry Stackhouse beat him up? That I felt sorry for him.
That was time to retire. You get beat up by Stack out here.
Yeah, because he didn't even really do nothing. And Stack just took it out on him because he was a smaller dude and he was soft.
He was giving Stack J-word, and Stack just started stealing it.
Kill, what do you think of? You think of Jeff Hornacek?
Yo, man, a lot of what you guys said, but people don't realize, like, in his best years, he was putting up about 26-5. And with the Sixers, he was putting up 27-5. And two steals, and you know, could hit the three at 40%. Could hit the
We won about 14 games.
Yeah, I know, right? he shot about 50% from the field, and he's just a great example of fundamental basketball because he wasn't overly fast or quick, but he used to just cook cats. And you know, Stackhouse loses props for that. Like, how you gonna go after Hornacek? Stackhouse never went after anybody else like that to punch him, but he's gonna. Punch on, you know, at
nobody
that point.
Nobody else gave him J-work like that.
Look at it. Hornacek seemed all frail and old with Stackhouse pounding on him like that. Like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
But what else was Hornacek? He was an all-star, you know.
Stockton used to give him, like, major easy shots. Like, he was coming off curls, and he'd be like, yo, Stockton's passes were so crisp that just rise and shoot. It's like layup.
And Jimmy, he used to rub his face for his kids, like, letting his kids know, like, hey, I'm there. Kind of like with Doug Christie, hold his fingers up.
All right, well, I take it back. No, I don't. I still ain't like it.
Nah, you playing basketball with the dirty ball and you're going to rub it on your face. You probably had a rash. Like, by the time you retired, you probably had a nasty rash on his chin. But our last birthday is actually a rest in peace shout out to one Mr. Walker Smith Jr., better known to you lay people as the great Sugar Ray Robinson.
My
he
birthday.
Was born.
Yay!
May 3rd, 1921, and died April 12th, 1989. Kill, what do you think of when you think of Sugar Ray Robinson?
I think of the name that predicated Sugar Ray Leonard, and I'm wondering why, you know, how do you go from from Walker Smith Jr. to Sugar Ray Robinson? Was that like a Hollywood thing? Like, okay,
got,
let's do this.
They got
like,
ring names, like they got stage names.
Yeah, like you know how Jamie Foxx's real name is Eric Bishop? I'm like, was it one of those kind of things?
You know what, though, how, you know, Muhammad Ali, he's the most popular, and he goes around, you know, saying he's the greatest and all that kind of stuff. But by a lot of accounts, like boxing purists, like Sugar Ray Robinson may have been the greatest boxer of all time. He wasn't a heavyweight, though. He's like, you know, welterweight, middleweight. The highest he's been is like light heavyweight. But the dude's record, like, it seemed like he fought every week. He was 173-19. Six draws and two no contests. He had 200 total fights. How do you fight 200 times in your life and you still live to be however old he was? Like,
see, that was because back in the day, athletes were clean, unlike Pacquiao, who takes drugs now. So, therefore, fight doesn't.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yo,
I mean, it's not like he lived a really, really long time, but 200 fights, you would expect his life to be a little shorter.
Yo, I feel bad for his pop. Like how does his name is Walker Smith Jr., right? How does Walker Smith Sr. feel that his name can't go on in history? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because a lot of people didn't even know his name. I didn't know his name was that until his birthday came up. It's crazy. But they said they're saying he was the reason that they created those pound-for-pound rankings because, like I said, he wasn't a heavyweight, but they were trying to acknowledge how good he was. So, you know, that's when they started doing those pound-for-pound rankings. And Muhammad Ali said himself that, you know, Sugar Ray and Joe Louis, they said Sugar Ray Robinson was the greatest fighter of all time.
Joe Louis was that dude, too, though.
Yeah.
All I know is the boy knocked out 108 people.
let's not forget about Jack Johnson because he took down Snow Bunnies.
No. He knocked out 108 other human beings.
Before we move on, I just want to give a quick shout out because I'm an uncle again today. My brother Walt and his wife just gave birth to a baby boy. So shout out to my nephew Dominic Woods. I hope everybody's doing good. Uncle, see
shout
you
out.
In a little while.
Shout out to Walt.
You two are
family.
Hey, Diamond Cam won't be a backcourt.
I'm going to say, somebody get that. Make sure y'all Make sure y'all throw that basketball in his hand before y'all leave the hospital. Stop playing.
For real.
All right.
Yo,
that, so that's the birthdays
thing,
for the day.
Another thing with Sugar Ray Robinson. Yo, he named his son Ray Robinson Jr. But that's messed up. Once again, his son could have been Walker Smith III. Like, that's just messed up, man.
Maybe his pop beat him or something, man.
Yeah,
you might have, you know, back in the days it was rough with
you.
The
don't want us to, you don't want us to start speculating.
I know. You don't want us to make the story up. And we'll make it up. And we'll give him a good reason. But that's the birthdays for the day. Jimmy's gonna tell everybody what happened this week while y'all were on the grind.
Absolutely. And while you were on the grind, is brought to you by Philly Auto Design. The summer is now approaching. You need to get your wheel looking right. Visit PhillyAutoDesign.com or go to WoolenSports.com and click on the logo on our homepage. First story I want to talk about, gentlemen, is a Norwegian Olympic swimmer, Dale Owen. He died of cardiac arrest at training camp for the Olympics. You guys hear about this story?
Yo, he was 26 years old. Like, that's crazy because swimmers, you got to have some of the best cardio out there. So it's like a little scary for a world-class athlete.
That's more evidence. That's more evidence. When is your time, yo?
Yeah, he was the last 100 meter breaststroke world champion. So you know he was going into the Olympics as kind of a favorite in that event. And training cramp, you know what I mean? He just checks out. That's scary, man. That's scary.
Absolutely. That reminds me of the story of Kelly Drive. I mean, I don't think it's true, but everybody talks about how Kelly Drive got his name. You ever hear that story?
Nah.
About how the runner Kelly, who was I don't think it's true anyway. So I'm not even gonna pollute the airwaves anymore. That Philly legend. That's not true. Somebody, Mike is tripping. But yo,
yeah.
But that being said, anybody else got any thoughts on this sad story with the Olympics approaching?
It was awesome. I'm musing.
Yo, it's crazy. It's crazy because, I mean, like between the soccer players, the one that almost died, and then the one that did die, a soccer player died on the field, and then the swimmer. I mean, you're talking about athletes in the prime of their lives, like dying. Like, you know, with me playing in a basketball league, I'm like, yo, am I going to, like, drop dead just trying to get my little weekend warrior, you know, basketball games in? If these guys are in the best shape of their lives. You know what I mean? So
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they've had, like, certain physicals or maybe he was on his Pacquiao, so he was trying to duck the physical to make him stop testing. I mean, who knows, but they probably have access to some of the best doctors to, you know, try to pick this stuff up ahead of time. And with all these, people dying of heart failure, you would think that there would be more testing. But, I mean, it's a sad story nonetheless with the Olympics approaching. But let's move on to another story, which I find sad, but some people don't. Jay-Z, a.k.a. Sean Corey Carter, designed the Nets' new logo. And to quite fanfare, I never saw a new logo get this much attention. But then again, it is Jay-Z.
Oh, man, Jay-Z.
Yeah, so with that being, what do you guys think about the logo? Do you like it at all?
It's quite boring. You know,
what's crazy, though?
Black and gray. It's going to be the type of logo that you can rock on your new era fitted.
That's exactly what I
like said.
Like, yeah, it'll look good on apparel, like whether it be a fitted hat or shirts and things like that. I don't know how it'll translate to the jersey, so to speak, but
that's what I'm saying.
Apparel,
like,
it's gonna be kinda
as far
nice.
As marketing goes, like it's, and they said Jay-Z, they said he designed it. So being from Brooklyn, you know, being an urban dude, that's probably all he was thinking about was it's gonna look hot on my fitted. But what about the marketing effort? Like that's really, it's like really dank and drab.
I wonder if he should have made it Jay-Z blue. Remember he's what he has his own color, a Jay-Z blue color. Kill, did you see the design and what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw the design. I mean it's all right. I mean Nets in the B and then Brooklyn. I mean it's okay.
It really looks like something that's hand sketched. I mean, I don't particularly like the new, you know, a lot of the new logos. They got a whole lot of flash and a whole lot of extra stuff that messes it up. But this might be a little too basic as far as, you know, like we said, the marketing efforts are concerned.
What I find
Man,
funny
how,
about it is
how dare you guys criticize a black hip hop icon who had the privilege and pleasure of owning his whole own basketball team and moving it to his city and state. You guys got a lot of nerve.
Man, I know you're being sarcastic, and I don't knock him for any move that he made from that standpoint. I'm just criticizing his family that try to make it a bigger deal than what it is.
I'm going to be honest with you. No, Jimmy. That design looks like it was drawn by a camel.
I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna keep it funky with you though, yo. That's gonna be hot, like on a T-shirt or a fitted, a new era. That'd be nice. But at the same time, I got tired of his family.
Yeah, but are all their shirts gonna be black and gray? Like,
I mean, I don't know. Like I said, maybe some of them be Jay-Z blue. But listen though, my
they gonna
problem
have blackout
was people
if they
telling
ever make
me
the playoffs.
How it was so deep artistically. It was a sign of a transition from one life to the next. I mean, some of the things that people were telling me. I'm like, you know how people take art, and if you want to call that art, and try to make it a lot deeper than what it is?
Yeah.
You know,
of course.
Like a Jackson Pollock, when he just throws paint at a wall, and you tell me that's art. You know, but these people are telling me how deep this new logo is. Like, I don't understand what it means. You know, when you say something that's stupid, people say, you don't understand. This logo
is the thing. This is the thing. Like, a net, like, doesn't have, like, a mascot, really, or any type of logo. It's like a net. They didn't even put a net in there. It's just... Wow. It's not like a grizzly or,
yo,
you know what I'm saying?
My thing is, you should have just changed the name of the team from the Nets anyway. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're moving to Brooklyn now. You should have probably called them the
Sixers. I don't know, but I don't
like
think
that.
It's as deep as what you're talking about, Jim. I don't think it's as deep as what these people are talking about. I think
they
tried
to make it a lot deeper than what it is.
I think
the
he
Brooklyn
went down
Hammer.
Somewhere in Brooklyn and told the dude to draw up something that looked nice on his fitted.
Yeah, they should have let MOP design a job. MOP would have made it look, you know, a little different. Anyway.
MOP.
Let's move on to another story. Shout out to Joey Campbell, J.D. Campbell. Buccaneers signed paralyzed Rutgers player. What are your thoughts on this?
Beautiful. Beautiful. It's a part of what sports should be about. I respect it.
On the real, I think it's kind of corny, but, you know, you got your opinion. I got mine.
Break down why you feel that way. Why you feel it's corny?
I'm just thinking. It's a nice gesture. It's a nice thing to do in a nice world, but what's the point? They're not going to give him no money. If I'm him, I'm like, if you signing me, give me a couple dollars. Give me a signing bonus.
Y'all ain't talking about large money. What's the point? I mean,
and the people out there, if you don't know the story, the guy who played for Rutgers, he was paralyzed in a game with Rutgers. And if you know the new coach for the Buccaneers, what's his name? Chiano.
Yeah.
He used to coach at Rutgers. So, you know, the guy's story is really close to him. So he went to management and just asked them, just as a nice gesture, could they sign him just to make his dream come true of making it to the NFL? So, I mean, yeah, it's nice. You know, like Austin said, it's beautiful, but I'm not necessarily saying that's what sports should be about.
You say, cut the check.
You know, because the NFL wasn't really trying to hear that. They had to use a real spot to sign this dude. So, you know, they're going to cut him soon and sign somebody for real. But
as much as sports is about the money, and we know it's about the money, man, it's nice to have some things that you can point to as symbolism, even if perception would lead us to believe that in some context I don't know. I lost my train of thought, man.
You know what? This is worse to me. This is worse than players getting signed for a day so they can retire with a team they spent a lot of years with, like the Eagles did for Brian Dawkins the other day. I mean, for real, if I'm him, I'm like, well, if y'all wanted me to retire from here, y'all wouldn't have cut me. FOH, I'm not coming.
Yeah.
But
Roger,
it's a beautiful world.
Drafting.
Yo, I think they did it. I think the coach did it just kind of maybe as a motivational thing. I mean, it's no way, like, dude's career is over. I mean, he may never walk again. So maybe he just had something. Maybe he could put the Buccaneers jersey or something just so it can motivate him. So you know what? I will walk again. Because right now, he's like he's more of a quadriplegic.
My man got doctor bills. Write me a check. That'd be real motivational.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
My man
you know
got
what?
Bills.
I think they'll slide. I think his coach might slide him something on the side. You know what I'm saying? After it's all said and done. I see that.
Slide my Dougie on the side.
Look, man, the bottom line is, you know, we got some people like the gesture. You know, a couple of us feel it's corny. talking about the Buccaneers, so you know, and he was literally.
Hey, I don't.
You know what though?
I think the school might be paying for that.
I think the school might be paying for that since he was still under a student as Rutgers. You know how Howard? You know, we are still covered under Howard.
Right. It's not going to be like a statute of limitations. Like, it ain't going to be a point where they're going to cut that off. You're not walking by 2015. Like, we're going to have to cut you off of your benefit.
That's probably true.
I don't feel like this was a pretentious move, because I think Shiano and he really have a tight relationship. So we don't know what that relationship is and what the motivation is and what, you know, what that all entails between he and his coach. So if that's what his coach felt he needed, you know what I'm saying? From us looking outside, I can see how some people would think it was corny, but I'm trying to look at the human side of this, and I think that it was a good move, man.
I don't particularly like humans, so that was cool.
Yeah, man, what shout out to him, but anyway, that's what happened
Larry like
while you were on the grind this week. Let's move on, good brothers.
All right, so let me tell everybody real quick how you can get in touch with us. Y'all can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing our site, make sure you click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles and all fair in sports and war blog. We actually got one of our bloggers in the chat room right now, Mr. Leroy McConnell, KCMAC38. So if y'all want to get into the chat room and holler at him, y'all can do that. I mean, go look at the blog tab, read some of his articles. If you like him, let the brother know you like him. If you don't like him, let him know. And he
will come back at you.
He'll make you like him. What? You can click on the respective icons on our website to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple devices. Just check out the site, man. Everything's there. Make sure you watch our videos also, because my man Jim does a nice job, and he works hard to get them out there. That's warroomsportstv.com. You could join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. While you're at it, click follow to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room tonight and every week during the show. So then if you want to call in and speak to us directly, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Just press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Press the 1 is like raising your hand, so raise your hand. And if you're sitting in a right spot in the classroom, we might see that and we might just call on you. So, Jim, you got it. Let's talk some sports,
yes,
bro.
Yes, sir. Let's talk some hot topics. First of all, I want you guys to know that these hot topics are brought to you by Audible. Your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible. Sign up. Listen, go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports. That's audibletrial.com/warroomsports. You'll actually get a free audiobook by doing this. And you can listen to a lot of bestsellers, a lot of sports books. And me personally, I listen to so many books I can't even tell you exactly. Right now, this is about 3 different books. And by the way, gentlemen, I want to tell you something. I was on Audible the other day, right? They have a section of books that are read by celebrities. Yo, why is y'all man Samuel L. Jackson in there? He read like 20 different books, yo. When did he sleep?
8 billion.
Yo, 8 billion.
It's funny.
When did he sleep, yo?
It's funny that you said that, because in the car last night, we saw like a pre-screening of The Avengers last night. Good movie. Mm-hmm. Everybody go see that. We just got to talking, and we were talking about Sam Jackson and, you know, how much he's gross and how many movies he's been in. So we took out the phone, and Brandy was reading to us all the movies that he'd ever been in. And the people that were with us, like, we were sitting in the car, and they were like, he was in that.
That ain't
like,
that
he
ain't
had to actually
car,
explain.
That ain't a car ride home.
Yo, it she had to kind of rush the last one because we were already home and the list wasn't finished yet.
Oh, Jackson, I know this has nothing to do with sports, but it kind of is, man. He talk about competing, actors competing. So Samuel Jackson, let me tell you about this dude, man. He's in these Apple commercials. He's reading books. He takes commercials. Like, yo, he takes commercials.
Yo, he's in video games. He has a voice in video games, animated movies.
Coming to America for like 5 minutes. Like, he takes any role there is. Like, when does he sleep? I don't think Samuel Jackson sleeps, eats, or has coital activity because there's no way he can do this. With everything
they
said, man. I mean, that's a little sidebar, real quick.
Yo, Sammy needs some yammies.
Yo, Samuel Jackson gets no sweet potatoes. Let's move on to other topic. Let's talk about the NFL draft and do a quick recap. How do you think? Who do you think had the best draft? Let's start with that.
The best?
That's a very hard question to answer without looking at it from hindsight 3 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, but it's a question that you kind of got to answer right away. It might not turn out to be that way. I don't know who had the best draft, but some of them that stood out to me was teams like the Giants had a pretty good draft. You know, not to be a homer, but the Eagles had a pretty good draft. But when the players end up, you know, turning out to not be what we expect them to be, everybody's going to be back on Andy Reid's top about, you know, not being able to draft. The Bengals even had a pretty good draft. And I think the New England Patriots, how they kind of went all defense, they had a good draft by default just because they went after the side of the ball where they needed it the most. You know, they were in the Super Bowl, but they had one of the worst defenses in the league. I mean, same thing with the Packers. You know, they went after a lot of defensive needs. The first two teams on the clock, you can't say, I mean, you can say that their draft was pretty good. They got the two quarterback prospects that are supposed to be can't-miss prospects. But I do have a question for you guys. The Washington Redskins. Okay, if you got your franchise quarterback with the second pick in the draft, and you gave up a lot of picks to go get him. Instead of using another pick to build around him, why would they use a pick on a quarterback, on a pretty good quarterback at that?
You know why?
The thing is, they've done it before.
You know why?
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
You said they what?
What?
They've done this
before.
They drafted a quarterback. I think it was Rick Meyer with the third pick overall, and then he went and drafted like another quarterback.
Nah, it was Heath Shuler they drafted, and then they drafted Gus. And then they got Gus Frenat.
But Gus Frenat, to be fair with that one, first of all, Heath Shuler wasn't the kind of prospect that RG3 is supposed to be. Second, Gus Frenat was like a seventh round pick. Like, they picked Kirk Cousins in the fourth round. Kirk Cousins is a pretty.
Heath was third. Heath was the third pick of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really talking about prospect as far as where you went in the draft, because where you go depends on the weakness or the strength of the draft. But Heath Shuler wasn't supposed to be an Andrew Luck or a Robert Griffin III, even though, in my opinion, I think, you know, RG3 is kind of, I don't know where the sudden hyping has come from, you know what I'm saying, where
he's black.
A lot of people are putting him on the same level as Andrew Luck or even better. Like, that's all of a sudden. So that kind of makes it, just, what are you telling me? You got two John Elways in one draft, and then in the fourth round, you go pick another quarterback. It didn't really make sense to me. Because even if you want a solid backup quarterback, I know everybody's down on Rex Grossman, but backup quarterback is the perfect thing for him to be. He knows the system. He can help out the young guy. And if RG3 ever gets hurt, you know, he can come in and win a few games. You know, I think a lot of the things he does kind of gets exaggerated, like the negative things that he does. But, I mean, he is a turnover machine. Can't argue that at all. But I don't know.
Who
I think he'd be better served as your backup than another rookie, you know?
Yeah, I mean, let's see what Norbert does. I mean, if Norbert performs, he looks like, yo, RG3 looks like Norbert and Bowfinger had a baby together. But anyway,
Norbert and Bowfing.
With that being said, though, I mean, only time will tell. I don't understand what their logic was in doing this. But, you know, because it kind of like, if you are RG3, how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
But like I said, they get
is this insurance? Do y'all think I have a little bit of a bus factor? Y'all getting insurance just in case I don't make it?
And Leroy McConnell says in our chat room, as good as we think Griffin is, he still is a black quarterback.
I didn't want to say it. I'm glad you said it.
You know what's so sad about that? Speaking of that, I was a link that's on our Facebook page, right, about the Broncos, the Ravens, and somebody else, teams going paperless. And they were saying that on a week-to-week basis, NFL teams' playbooks are 500 pages, and they print this every week for all 53 players. And this is the reason why they're trying to make a transition to teams using the iPad to put their plays on. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, that's sad because all this, the stigma attached to being a black quarterback, is it because we can't, you know, take in that much information on a weekly basis? Like,
It may not be that they can't, but are they willing to put in the work that you need to do that?
Let me address that real quick because there's and I definitely feel a blog coming on, but one of the things that happens with the black quarterback is a lot of times we do have superior athletes that end up at that position and they're not coached up on the strategies and nuances of the quarterback position, being a chess player, because when you have that much athleticism, look at the dude from Michigan. Who was Michigan's quarterback? The little running dude.
That cat.
I know what you're saying because it's funny you say that.
He does not know the first thing about playing quarterback. They just snap him the ball. He doesn't know anything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I blame it on the system because coaching, at the collegiate level and now even more so at the high school level, coaches are concerned with what can win now. In high school and college, talent and athletic ability oftentimes can trump skill level. Why? Because your skill hasn't developed there anyway.
We saw Mike Vick in the national championship game.
Let me ask you another question. I forgot where I heard. I watch so much sports and listen to so much sports, I forgot. But they were talking about the Bernard Hopkins, right? And they were comparing him to Roy Jones. They were saying that Roy Jones was so gifted from an athletic standpoint that it was hard to teach him fundamentals because his athleticism was so great that he just dominated without even being a great fundamental fighter, whereas Bernard wasn't as gifted athletically. So he had to, like, work hard and build upon his fundamental skills. With that being said, they said once Roy lost his athleticism, he's getting knocked out all over. He goes, Roy Jones might fight us, like fight one of us right now at a bar. Like, he's still going around getting knocked out by cats.
That's a great example.
Allen
Iverson without the speed.
That's a great analogy and point because I look at that analogy and example that you just gave, and I see it all over sports. All over. And that's just the day and age. We're so caught up as a society in the athletic talent and the athletic potential that skills development isn't a priority placed on it. So
here's the thing, though. We're getting really sidetracked. We're talking about the draft. But what I'm saying is if you're coming up as a high school quarterback or a college collegiate athlete and you are so gifted from an athletic standpoint, a lot of times, you know, it's hard to teach the fundamentals because I guess, like, they won't, like, take it in, so to speak, because, yo, why am I going to take time to do that when I could just run past this guy or jump over this guy? You know,
you're talking about young kids. You got to try to instill in these kids the big picture because you got to let them know where you're trying to go. You're not going to be able to just run past everybody. I know it's hard to do extra stuff when you don't have to because, you know, that's human nature. Nobody wants to do extra when they don't have to. But if you look at the bigger picture, you know, and you can get somebody who can, instill the bigger picture in these kids, then it might be different. But they're not worried about instilling that because they're worried about winning now and keeping their job.
And to butcher that point and jump right on the heels of what Dev said, as a dad, I don't care how fast my son is, how high he jumps, I'm going to kick his butt to gain the skills that are necessary to be successful. So if you go out and run a 4.2, that doesn't mean that you're not learning how to block. Matter of fact, get your behind on the line. You're going to play line for a while.
Yeah. But you know what? This is definitely something that one of us, Austin, since you already volunteered, could blog about, or even Leroy, just in the chat room, you could blog about it too. Because there's so many facets. It's an interesting conversation because, like Dev said, these are young kids, and it's hard to tell them to do this when you can, you know, when you can do the other things. Like, they're kind of at a disadvantage for being athletes. And also, when you look at everything that's given to them so young now, it's crazy. Like,
I mean,
Kill,
from the college days, you know. I take a Joan to dinner if, you know, all you got to do is show up. But, you know.
It's the same concept. If you want to give me sloppy toppy without me having to take you anywhere, then why am I going to take you anywhere? You know what I mean?
Taking you out is the fundamentals.
That's the analogy right there. That's the analogy. Why learn the fundamentals?
I used to tell them, look, I'm advanced, baby. I'm advanced.
Yeah.
What else is going on in sports this week?
Another analogy, man. You know, y'all dudes is funny, man. Y'all dudes is funny. But, you know, with that being said, let's move on. And Leroy McConnell says, Warren Moon, Donovan Randle, Culpepper, where are they now? They're supposed to be mentors. First off, with your list, Warren Moon, okay. Randle, okay. Donovan, take him off your list. And Culpepper is trying to make a comeback somewhere on his earth.
Warren Moon is actually working with
Cam Newton.
He's working with Cam Newton. So, I mean,
yeah.
Looks like his mentorship is.
And Kevin Lang is checking in on Twitter and saying he want to know what's up with their Wunderlich score. What was RG3's Wunderlich score?
I don't know.
It was in the 20s. It was like 24.
They keep saying 24. He's such an intelligent quarterback, but I think that's their way of saying this black guy is well spoken. So, you know,
that doesn't mean he's intelligent on the field.
His Wunderlich was a 24.
Word.
Okay. All right. Well, we got an answer for him. Let me tell Kevin right now.
So
shout
where does that rank,
though? Checking in on Facebook.
Is that average
that's
or is that above average?
That's middle of the pack. The highest you can score is 50. The cornerback ball from Louisiana, he failed it, and you can't really fail the Wunderlich.
He got like a 3, right?
He forgot how to spell his name.
Yeah, he got a 4.
Dang, he got a 4. He said he didn't take the test seriously.
PJ, let me ask you a question.
And make it as brief as possible. Like we were talking about is how you know it started with the conversation about NFL playbooks being 500 pages on a weekly basis. And we were saying maybe that's some of the reason why African American quarterbacks, you know, don't get off the way that they're projected to do. Because it's a lot of information to take in. Do you think that's part of it?
It could be. I mean, it could be what they're accustomed to, too. Like, they may never have had to study anything
Boom.
Like that. I mean, from in, on the
Tie
court
out.
Or on the field or, like, in the classroom. Because, I mean, they've always been catered to and coddled their entire lives. So
that's exactly what it is, yo.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. They might look at that like, man, I ain't.
Which one of y'all brought up, which one of y'all brought up the Vic example? I think it was Dev. Vic had 10 plays. At Virginia Tech. 500.
No,
no lock.
Yo,
yeah.
But I'm not
going to run,
though.
The Broncos kept going back to a college playbook trying to cater to Tim Tebow.
Hey, Jim, if my playbook was 500 pages, I'd probably be a bum, too. I ain't going to front.
And the thing about it is, like, when you read up on it, it's one of them things where a lot of that is for the quarterback. Like, offensive linemen, like, yo, either I'm blocking this way, that way, there's only so much that they can change for them. But from a quarterback standpoint, like, yo, like 400 pages is yours.
Yeah. You got to know what everybody's doing at all times.
That's all crazy, right, man. Let's move on, though. Let's talk some more football, man. We can't talk football without talking two stories. But let's start with this one. Let's talk about Bountygate and Spygate and everything going on with, you know, with the NFL and I hate all this gate stuff. Gate stuff bothers the hell out of me. When are we going
to
stop doing that?
Everything. And half the people that talk about don't even know what Watergate was. Like, they probably don't even know the origination of why this is called gate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man, all they know is, like, never mind, man. Ain't no Bill Gates. But, yo,
Did you guys see John Harbaugh's comment?
Yeah, I got it real quick if you want me to.
Oh, yeah, read John Harbaugh's comments.
He was on a radio station in Baltimore, you know, talking about the whole bounty thing. And he said, to me, it's never worth it. You got to figure out ways to use the rules to your advantage. You have to figure out ways to make the most of everything. We have to work the new rules as far as what we can do, blah, blah, blah. But the meat of what he actually said was, in the end, everything is brought before the light of day when it's all said and done. What happens, even the thing in New England, no matter whether those things had any impact or whether they won their championships or not, they got asterisks now. It's been stained. Now, that's the thing that created the firestorm. And y'all know who the first person was who took offense to those comments, which made Harbaugh have to go back and clarify his comments later on in the day. But I'm really starting to dislike this guy on TV because he can't separate his job from his old job. And I'm talking about Teddy Bruschi because he had a problem with what he said. And he said, well, when I look down at my fingers and see my rings, you know, I know all the hard work that went into to getting those rings. But, fellas, I got a question for you. This is what Teddy doesn't seem to understand. To be in that position to win Super Bowls, you had to be good. But if you're good and you're cheating and you have an advantage, that makes you even better, Teddy. So nobody said that they didn't work hard, but you're still cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if a good team is cheating, it's a good team, a great team.
Exactly. Yo, I call that right there the Manny Pacquiao theory. We know you're good, but you're still cheating. So anyway, with that being said, man, like, NFL is buck wild now. It's like, it's never good news when I cut on 212. It's like, yo, what's going on?
Yeah, the thing about Teddy Bruschi, like Dev said, is he's so jaded and he's so one-sided. You know you're not going to get an objective viewpoint from him. So, like, I mean, I think they put him on there to stir it up. Like, I can't even understand. I mean, I know he has a job with them, but, like, you can't even take what he – whenever he's talking about the Patriots, you can't really take it, like – you got to, like, pull back and almost take it with a grain of salt. This dude is so one-sided, he don't even see outside. Yeah, you were good, but guess what? All those rings on your fingers, none of them came after Spygate was unveiled. Like, yeah. They haven't won a Super Bowl since then. Not saying that they're not good, because they've been to two, I think, since then.
Yeah.
But
and PJ, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, they've been to two, so you're proving, you worked hard and you're good, but when you were cheating, it got you over the hump. And all your Super Bowls came by 3 points. So you weren't that much better than the team you were playing.
I happen to be watching another sports show on another network. With two guys that have a first name named Mike in the morning. And they said Mike Greenberg was in the early morning. He arrived, so it was like 4 or 5 in the morning. And he said Teddy Bruschi is usually a jovial, you know, jokey type guy. Walks by, always speaks. He said he saw Bruschi coming, and there was like storm clouds over him. He was brewing.
Lightning in the background.
Said, hey, how you doing, Teddy? Teddy growled, bumped him, and kept moving by briskly, very fast. So Greenberg was like, darn, what's wrong with Teddy? What happened? So he turned his BlackBerry on, and he said, that's what happened. Someone said something about the Patriots. I'm going to be quite frank, like, Teddy Bruschi has made my list, and we all know what the list is. If you're not familiar with the show, go back, listen to a couple episodes. We all have our lists, and people go on those lists, and that's the beat up on site list. And, you know, not saying that we would win that battle. I'm not saying that I could beat up Teddy Bruschi because he has an unfair advantage. His head is the size of a cinder block. However, because of his inability to be objective at all about anything regarding football, because one of y'all said when it deals with the Patriots. No, it's not just that, because you can talk about anything football-related.
He brings the Patriots up, whatever they talk about.
And he's going to bring the Patriots in it and how great they are.
And how they were, and we wouldn't have done that, and we wouldn't have stood for that.
I just want to know, what is Jim Jones, what is Coach Belichick giving these guys to feel the way they feel, yo? It's like,
give them that real,
they're riding it out.
I'm going to tell you what it is. And y'all know it's going to sound funny, but it's the truth. He gives them a dad.
Yeah,
yo,
I guess
dudes
so.
Don't have no, yo, these dudes don't be having no pop.
And
yo, he's
I'm
like
not going to from a local standpoint, yo, Andy Reid is starting to build that same kind of, like,
oh, yeah, they love him.
With his players. Like,
everybody
loves
him.
We talk about
fans.
All the time. Like,
yo, the fans, everybody love Andy.
Andy
Big
Reed
Red, they all call him Big Red. You're right, Jim. He's building up that type of contingency of supporters who have been coached by him. Like, anybody
yeah.
that's been coached by him, when they leave, they very rarely talk. Because, I mean, apparently, and what I hear out of Philly, not to digress, but Andy be fighting to keep these dudes. Like, Andy was really fighting to keep Donovan McNabb. It's just that Joe Banner and those guys were like, yo, we can't really make, we can't really do this. Like, he's always
cabbage.
Fighting for his players to keep them. I think
even
when the contract's up. Uh-huh.
Hey,
yeah,
PJ,
right.
I'm thinking, though, how can you not love Santa Claus, though? Like,
come on. <God. laughs>
we didn't love Santa Claus in the 60s. We snowballed him.
Yo, I'm just saying, like, Andy is
even
the same type of allure. Like,
these guys
love him.
Asante had some beef with the organization, but in his exit interview, he was like, yo, I love Big Red, and me and Big Red is cool. It's just the organization. So the loyalty.
Yo, you're right. They separate him from that. Even when God leaves, they separate him from the organization. Like, he ain't the head honcho.
And, you know, they said that they've taken a lot of GM duties away from him and given them to Howie Roseman.
I don't think anything
he's not
was
even
wrong
calling
with
the shots
Harbaugh
like he
said.
Used to the personnel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think there was anything wrong with what Harbaugh said. I think he kept it real. I think he was candid. He was honest. And he answered the question that was asked of him.
But,
and
you know, Beyonce,
Patriot zombies.
You know what? But when he clarified it, and I have that statement too, when he clarified it, that's how I interpreted it from the start. I didn't necessarily think he was saying, you know, their titles are stained in my eyes. I think he was talking about fan perception, you know, throughout the country. That's what I thought he meant. He didn't have to tell me, you know, later on. But, you know, Brewski went on and bashed him, and Brewski went and told the story of how he was on nobody's coaching radar, and when Ozzie Newsome and management in Baltimore asked Belichick, Belichick said,
yeah,
you should try out John Harbaugh up in Philly, blah, blah, blah. So this is what he said to clarify his comments. He said, I have so much respect for Coach Belichick and the job he does and has accomplished in his Hall of Fame career. I called him to remind him of my respect for him. I also reached out to Teddy Bruschi, which he shouldn't have done, who rightfully defended those Patriot players and coaches on ESPN, to tell him that I agree with him that the Patriots earned their victory. I would have called Teddy Bruschi and asked him for a fair one. I would have maybe called Bill Belichick and told him I respect you because he did help you get a job, but I wouldn't have apologized to Bruschi and, like, kissed up to him. I'd have asked him.
Yo,
I'd have told him he had a problem with me. He know where M&T Bank Stadium is, and, you know.
Man, that's for weeks, man. It's like he's not even allowed to have an opinion no more, like, because in the fans' eyes, they are asterisks. Like, we joke about it all the time. We talk about Spygate, and we're going to talk about Bountygate the same way in the years to come.
Well, because I know you're about to move, because there's some bigger stories that's kind of stemming
absolutely,
from this.
Man.
But
absolutely.
Real
let's
quick,
not get off on that, because we can rank Brewski for
but real quick,
hour.
I just wanted to tell you, like, in the bigger scheme of things, personally, I still think Spygate is a worse infraction than Bountygate. I think it scars the integrity of the league a little more than the Bountygate. I think Bountygate is more of a morality type thing. You know, that's a human thing. Like, you don't want to hurt people. You don't want to do this and that. But these dudes cheated the actual game. And I think this kind of helps you win a little more than putting some bounties on some dudes, but that's my opinion. You can go ahead.
Plus, Dev, if you real quick, if you listen to all, like, almost all the ex-players, Bountygate is way more common than Spygate. Like,
yeah,
everybody's
like
every player's like, yeah, we all did that. Like, I mean, we weren't trying to hurt nobody,
well,
but if you had a big hit, look, the pot is mine. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's more widespread and common throughout that whole fraternity of football players.
Well, speaking of the pot, what's up with them punishments, Jim?
Yeah, basically, y'all commissioner, he got his he treated the Saints like Mia Abu-Jamal.
I argue.
He's still handing out punishment, man. Let me ask you a question. With all the punishment they got, you know, with Zimmer being sent only for a year and the coach being gone for a year, you guys think that is overboard, or you think it's justified?
Well, let me tell, because, you know, Jimmy be forgetting sometimes. Some of our listeners might be under a rock. So their linebacker, Jonathan Vilma, he got suspended without pay for the entire 2012 season. Defensive lineman Anthony Hargrove, now with the Packers, he was suspended for 8 games. Saints defensive end, he's still with them, Will Smith, he was suspended for 4 games. Linebacker Scott Fujita, who's now with the Browns, he's going to miss the first 3 games, and all this is without pay. I got a new nickname for Roger Goodell. Jimmy calls him Dumbledore, and we call him Roger Goodell. His nickname, his new nickname to me is Thor. Bodie laying the hammer. He be laying the hammer down on these dudes, y'all. Thor Goodell.
DK, he hit his season come off with no pay. So I hope these dudes got a nice stash, or I hope these creeps got receipts, because it's going to be so funny.
Yo, Vilma got roofed, like, guys. Vilma got roofed, man.
I think the suspension of the players, particularly Jonathan Vilma and the other dude that got suspended for 8 games, I think that's excessive. I think it's excessive because at the end of the day, you're punishing Vilma, a player, and making him the equivalent of a coach. It's the coach's responsibility to be a part of the management structure and essentially manage the inmates in the insane asylum. Vilma's an inmate. So you can't.
I heard a theory this morning that makes it even worse than the coach, even though they got equal time. You know what I'm saying? If you look at the track of both of their careers, since he's now in the coaching and Vilma's still a player, you know, we don't know if he's going to do anything more after he's a player. So we're assuming that he only has a few years left in his career. So you're taking away 1 year out of a few when Sean Payton could feasibly coach for the next 20 years. So it's really not an equal punishment,
right.
If you think about
That's a great point. Vilma's earning potential, even as you say, all right, so maybe he's got another four years to go. His earning power and potential will be diminished. Because let's keep it real, Vilma is no Ray Lewis. So he's not getting paid major chips into his 30s. And a lot of that,
Brad, he took it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, my fault. Go ahead. I was just going to say, he took a pay cut this year. He was going into this year, they restructured his contract. So he was going to make, I think, $3 million this year. But before the restructuring, I know it was more than that, maybe like 4 or 5 or something like that. But he had restructured prior to this, you know, to this coming down. So he was taking a pay cut.
That's crazy, man. I mean, like, a year without pay can cripple anybody, man. Like,
think about that. And it's funny because we look at them like – the funny thing is, y'all, we look at them like football players, and they do make, a ton of money. But most of them dudes, and, you know, it's to their own fault, they live about as close to the edge as we do. So just like them dudes probably have multiple homes, an exotic amount of cars, like supporting several family members, all kinds of things. And they may have built all that up, like we talked about in prior episodes, to that salary has to support that stuff. And if you take a year away,
that's
why, like,
I'm glad. I'm glad Cromartie don't play for the Saints, man.
Yo,
kids be
yo. I hear
he would go to jail.
Cromartie
would go to jail, like Travis Henry, for inability to pay his child support.
Travis Henry went to jail for a little bit more than not paying.
Travis was moving that Yakum. Yeah, but I hope he stashed more cash. Hey, I hope he stashed more cash than Burke Pinnell, because he's in trouble, man. Like you said, his career might be over, yo. Like, real talk. His career might be over.
Yeah, PJ, did they get the deal done? He's not like on a 1 year tender or nothing, is he?
No, I think they – you mean the deal for his restructuring? I think they did get that done. Yeah, they got that done, I believe.
Okay. Because I was making sure, like, because if he's, like, not, you know, if he wasn't under contract for next year, they could possibly cut him if he come back in not good enough shape. That would be messed up for them to do.
His career might be over because of it.
They still might cut him. I don't know.
Yo, but the stain that goes with this is going to last for a long time. They basically set that franchise back. Me and Dev had a conversation this week, and I was telling Dev, like,
yo, with all the punishment and everything they got, I would trade a chip for that in a heartbeat. If they,
yeah.
If I
could go through
chip,
that, I'd be all right.
You could, yo, I'd take a chip and you could do all this to my team. Blow them up. Find everybody. Give me the coach.
You know what?
Because
I got those pictures of me at the parade. Anything
exactly.
that happens afterwards is. It's all good. That's our son. That's their generation.
I don't think they're as bad off as people think. Man, Jonathan Vilma is 30, so he's right at that age where it all goes downhill from there.
That makes it even worse, though.
He's still the best
linebacker.
And,
yo, the thing about it, Austin, yo, Goodell's not done yet. Yo, Goodell might come in and say, yo, I'm taking your chip. Me and Dad were talking about it, too. He was like, I was like, he can't do that. He's like... That's Goodell. He might do.
I don't think they already have a problem with Goodell, and it's not so much Goodell. It's really the players' fault because they signed the collective bargaining agreement giving him this absolute power.
Yeah, they
how do you do that?
Jury and
how do you do that?
How do they do that?
I don't understand.
They signed.
Because I'm not. So I'm saying
like,
even before the whole lockout and all that stuff happened, they complained about the fact that if you get in trouble. When you do an appeal, you do the appeal to the same guy who gave you the punishment. So why would you expect him to change his mind? Why do you not fight tooth and nail to get that taken out of the collective bargaining agreement? Those guys were so greedy about the money, nobody wanted to miss any time, and they did all of this basically for nothing. They didn't get anything done.
Because you know what it is? A lot of them saying, well, that's not going to happen to me. And they think they're not going
to
get in trouble and have to face him.
True. The other point I wanted to make about Jonathan Vilma is his middle name is Polonese.
It is?
Chick-fil-A sauce, boy.
Yo,
Polonese.
You serious? You joking?
Shout out to Olden Polonese and shout out to Chick-fil-A. But yo.
Just like Olden.
Just like Olden in the sauce.
You brought up a point that he's 30 years old, which means that he's on that downside anyway. And with that being said, missing a year, his career might be over, man. Like, there's only so much time he got, man. If he can't get that time back.
Yeah, speaking of this, speaking of investigations, okay, if Jonathan Vilma has been cited in Bountygate, how come no New England players were not cited in Spygate? Why weren't New England players investigated saying, like, hey, Tom Brady, did you have extra information from Coach Belichick about the defense in the Eagles Super Bowl or the Rams Super Bowl or this game or that game? And I almost wanted to send Bill an email saying, like, why didn't you suspend Belichick for a season or at least – half a season, so it's kind of crazy.
Hold on, real quick, Kill. You can't bring up the Eagles Super Bowl because they already had McNabb on their team anyway. So it was.
the only benefit of the doubt that I could give Goodell about that was the fact that he was a new commissioner and he might not wanted
he
to
just,
come in yeah, right
he
away.
Just became commissioner
and do all of that. But at the same time, you had to do more than what you did. And what was the point of burning the evidence? That was the suspect part to me. Even if
yo,
the punishment
yeah.
was
no,
well, that strict.
Another reason is this. Robert Kraft got juice, yo.
He's like
Bishop Roof. He got juice. And,
You
know, it's a big difference of messing with Robert Kraft and messing with the Saints owner. I forgot the gentleman's name on the top of my head. The new owner of the basketball
new
team.
New owner of the Hornets.
Benson.
The boy that was dancing around with the umbrella when they won the chip, So he's not Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft got juice, and that's another reason. Robert Kraft said, "Yo, I need that evidence burned. It's over with, y'all."
Named Benson or something, right?
Yeah, that's it.
B-Boy said, "He said the New England Patriots are the Republicans." Jim, question for you, real quick though, since we're on this topic, what do you think? Like, you know, the whole Bountygate thing and the kind of punishment that we know why the punishment is like it is, you know, because they're preaching safety and all that kind of stuff. We all know that Junior Seau died yesterday, you know, of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. Do you think that had anything to do? Because a lot of people are speculating that this is like a Dave Dorson, Andre Waters type situation. So, you know, we had a big tiff on our Facebook page. Leroy wrote a blog about Bountygate, and then subsequently Seau died, and somebody kind of took his blog personally. Like, you know, you can't complain about the punishments in the NFL because he's trying to keep it safe. I mean, look what happened to Junior Seau.
Man,
y'all think these two have any correlation?
Jesus loves that dude, man.
that was the response. I just love that. But we're going to talk about that either. And PJ, anybody want to go ahead and talk about this?
Yeah, I'm sad, man.
Go ahead, Austin.
Sad, yo. Go ahead.
It is sad. I think it's just, it's unfortunate that these guys take this type of trauma to their heads, man, and it just has this type of, like effect down the line. Like, I don't know, man. I heard my man Marcellus Wiley on the radio station today when he was, like, talking yesterday,
yeah.
I guess, when he
Yo,
just got
he
the news.
Yo, he was breaking down.
Yo, he was completely done. I'm surprised to let him talk on the radio like that.
Yeah, he said he just spoke
crazy.
To him, like, Monday at dinner, right?
Yeah, Monday. Yeah, there were people that said
and
they saw him at a golf tournament on Monday. And he was his normal self. And I guess it's that bipolar, like, and like a lot of people say, football players, they try to, like, hide being hurt because it's such a tough man's game and a tough man's sport, and they definitely don't want to show any signs of weakness, even post-football. So it's just, I don't know, man. Like,
I don't know if you guys saw it, but they had his mom's of a press conference show. That was, like,
yesterday. Yo.
So I had to walk out the room. I ain't going front, yo. I was, like, shedding a man tear. Like, I was like, yo, come on, man. Why y'all doing this, man? Why y'all talking to this man's mom? Like, that was, like, the worst thing I've seen on TV.
On that same day, yeah, when she got the news. Like, that's
yeah.
something to do a press conference with the mom that gets the news.
You know, it's funny. It's funny because what everyone says about Junior Seau was he was larger than life. He was a giving individual. He was – I think no matter how you cut it, whether it's the trauma from – the 7 car accidents per game equivalent of you know, trauma that those dudes go through, or, you know, just the lifestyle itself, football contributed to this man's demise. Football contributed because even if you want to look at it and take the game itself away, the fact that this dude, you know, was always seen as the man, and it's like, when you're a professional athlete, particularly a professional football player, you live a regimented military-type lifestyle where everything is given to you. You're kind of still treated like a child. Everyone thinks for you. When you leave the game, all that's gone. And there's no support system or no structure for some of these dudes. And that's one of the reasons I knew there was something wrong with Junior when dude held his retirement press conference and told us all that he would be continuing his career. I said, there's no reason for someone of his stature with his success to turn around and say, I want to continue as a mediocre to good player when you've been to the mountaintop, essentially, in your career. So
hey, you know what, Austin,
you make a
real good point, though, because, you know, that could be one of the things, that could be one of the underlying problems. Like, everybody is kind of speculating that this has to have something to do with trauma to the head and stuff like that, and I, you know, that was my speculation as well. I mean, when I found out that he shot himself in the chest instead of the head, I immediately thought about the Dave Dorson situation and was thinking, well, maybe he did that because he wants them to find out what was wrong with his brain and let everybody know. But at the same time, it could be, you know, some of the things that you talked about, how, you know, these guys don't really. They've been doing one thing their whole lives, and when that goes, you know, depression can kick in
purpose?
Because you don't know anything else, and you're kind of socially awkward, and I don't know. He has 3 kids, an ex-wife, so it's not like he didn't have things to live for. So I don't know. I don't know what it is, and like I said, the speculation is about head injuries, but I heard some people actually say what you just said. It could be depression. Adam Schefter actually went up and said something similar to that, saying how, you know, when this is all these guys know, like, some guys just don't know how to handle it when it's over.
Brad, I was going to say, you know, I think both sides are right, because definitely he was depressed. But one thing with the head injuries, what they're finding is that the constant pounding of the brain to the cranium in football, it causes the brain to shake, which then causes activity in the deep limbic system, which is the middle part of your brain and your emotional center, to have more activity. So what happens is the depression is compounded, and your brain isn't able to handle it the way that, let's say, somebody with a regular brain would. Also, it affects the temporal gloves, which causes football players to be more violent when they're in their regular lives. And military guys kind of have the same kind of brains. So, you know, that's about that.
Yo, I want all of our listeners to know. I want all of our listeners to know that, yes, he really is a doctor. Yo, we have a doctor on our show.
I don't know what that is, so I'm going to say yes.
good points, Kill. Good points. I think I would take the approach that you just took. I would say everything, all in all, contributed to his demise. A combination of the pounding pause that he took throughout his career, combined with, you know, not being able to adjust. You know, they said that at the end of that Super Bowl, when the Patriots were on pace to go 19-0, when they lost, the person that took it the hardest was Junior Seau. They said he was out on the field laying down, face down, with his head just face down, helmet still on, for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, real quick, Austin. One point that I want to make, and I'll probably get killed for this, but when I was like listening to everything and thinking about it, I don't know if it crossed anybody else's mind, but did anybody think about possible steroid use? And the reason I say that is
rage.
Because
steroid rage.
Yeah, because a couple of his teammates have got, you know, Merriman being the most popular, was caught up in the Valco scene. He's from out there where Valco is, and, you know, this is something else that's linked to kind of suicide, whether it be NFL players or collegiate football players. I mean, even a wrestler, Chris Benoit, had Roy Rage and murked his whole family and murked himself. I didn't want to speculate because there's never been any kind of a thing with Junior Seau being on steroids, but it kind of crossed my mind.
Got to add it to the mix because we really don't know what happened. You know what
I'm
saying?
The thing is,
all the stuff that we're saying, dude could have just been having a really bad day. You know
we
what I'm saying? None of
it
might not be.
We got a caller on the line. The homie's on the line. One of our main bloggers, Leroy McConnell, wants to say a few words about this. Let's bring him on.
What
Mr. McConnell.
Good,
What's good?
Hey, Roy. What's good?
Hey, man. You know, I got chastised yesterday for that, the payout, and, you know, rest in peace for him, but, you know, that blog was not geared to him. I mean, I put that blog out the same day, but early before he, you know, passed away.
And
but,
plus, didn't you,
Leroy,
didn't you just
really,
add to that?
Because really
wasn't that an older blog, and you just added to it, like, when the
exactly.
punishment came down? Yeah.
Exactly.
Leroy, we appreciate you apologizing. Well, one thing we don't do on the War Room is if we telling the truth or expressing our opinion, we not apologizing. I thought the blog was great.
Only thing I'm apologizing for is that, you know, he died. That's I feel bad for that.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for anything that I wrote.
No
because,
doubt.
You know, truth be told, you know, you want to bring up the story, I promise you this. National Football League, gonna look at this man's brain, and they're going to go ahead and say, well, it was linked to Autumn Hicks. And that's what they're gonna say. Cause they want this situation to be taken seriously. If it's a steroid, they're gonna cover it up. They're not saying anything with that head injury situation, the issue. That man had never been with a concussion in 20 years of football. He has never had a concussion. They had said that.
At least not one that he admitted to.
Well, okay, but you know what? Somebody would have known he had a concussion.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, you know, I'll tell you who another person you better watch out for. You better watch out for T.O. T.O.
Oh, yeah. T.O. tried to murk himself a couple times while he was playing. So, definitely.
And that has
nothing
to do with
his head. Plus, he's having money problems. That's a lot of,
yeah. Money problems. You know, I'm not the man no more. She don't, you know. She don't love me. You know what? Who would say that, you know, that might have a could be gay. Who knows? And somebody won't snitch.
Yo, if T.O. murked himself, I'm going to his funeral. That was my homie, man.
T.O. is like one of those guys who can't, like, you know, he probably can't function without being in the spotlight, too. You know,
Crazy.
He's always been
PJ, did you just say T.O. tried to kill himself with vitamins?
He tried to murk himself in Dallas with vitamins that day. Remember that time he had the suicide scare? My man tried to overdose himself with vitamin C and
amino
and coenzyme. Yeah, amino acids, and vitamin C.
And he took a whole bottle of Flintstones.
He took a whole bottle of chewables. He was drooling when they found him with gummy bears in his mouth.
Gummy bears are going to purgatory, man.
That man tried to hurt himself.
But anyway,
hey, but Leroy, man,
yeah,
the,
T.O. is
the homie Rosebud was supposed to call in. He never called
in,
so
hey, I know Rosebud's out there. We definitely got to call him out
when we get back
on
the Facebook page. We got to call him out.
Bring it on.
All right, man. Thanks for your call, man. Appreciate it.
Y'all do.
All right,
Leroy.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's my man, Leroy.
We gotta watch out for T.O. Make sure he cool, man. For PJ had to go to the funeral.
Straight up, dog. I'd be messed up, man.
But yo,
hey,
y'all
know
dude,
we know how big of a fan
funny.
PJ was, man. We had to expense that through the company, man. Just
yo,
take it out and go.
Y'all
know this because it happened to basketball players, baseball players. You know, not even really hockey players that kill themselves. They might, like, die from concussions, but, you know, it seemed to be apparent, you know, the University of Penn football player who murked himself, it's been happening a lot more with football players, undoubtedly.
Well, you know, it's funny because it touches on both sides of the reasoning that we have. Brody, when you look at football players and the lifestyle they live and how regimented it is, they're controlled from there. And then you look at the amount of pounding and trauma their bodies take. You don't find that in any other sport. Even hockey.
Well,
basketball players essentially do what they want.
Football is definitely a violent sport. And speaking of violent sports, we got to talk real quick about the boxing that went down this past weekend. Austin's favorite homie, the old head, B-Hop and Dolphin. What you guys think about this? Should B-Hop just walk away, man?
You know,
you should have been walked away.
Nah, see, I was talking to some boxing people, and, you know, I kind of was thinking exactly what they were thinking. You know, they just do it more than me, so it sounds better coming from them. But Chad Dawson was not a good matchup for Bernard Hopkins to begin with. So, you know, for a lot of people who are saying he should have walked away, I mean, at this ripe old age, he has dominated some pretty good fighters. So I'm not sure if it's time to walk away or if that was just a bad matchup for him. I guess we'll find out in whatever his next fight will be. If he looks this bad, you know, two fights in a row, and you're already 47 years old, then it'll probably be time to go ahead and hang it up.
Here's my thing.
Hey, Dev, real quick. Hey, Jimmy, real quick, I got a question. How many more wins does he need to catch Sugar Ray Robinson?
like a fiend. I made it a fiend 20 or something like that.
Hey, Kill,
they don't do it like back
in
the day.
Every week.
They used to schedule a fight like every week back in the day.
Being a
man in his 30s, I'm impressed by the fact this dude could dance around for 12 rounds, y'all. I was tired on the couch watching him. To be as close to 50 as he is and being able to even make it 12 rounds is an accomplishment. But with that being said, he's not going to want to, like, take a step down in terms of competition if he continues to fight. So there's not too many fights out there for him. He wants to fight the best. And if you want to fight the best, and even stylistically, if you're not fighting Chad Dawson for the belt, who's he going to fight?
I mean, there were a couple other people out there, but I just
Go
ahead, PJ.
No, I was just going to say, too, with the way that Chad Dawson fought him, like, Bernard is a very, like, aggressive type of fighter, like a wrestler almost, because what he does, if you notice in Bernard fights, when he throws punches, he'll grab you after he throws punches instead of, like, dipping a counterpunch. So to avoid counters coming, a lot of times he'll grab you. And the way that Chad Dawson fought him was to keep Bernard, like, keep your arms distance, that distance from you and Bernard. So basically, always stay on the outside. And always don't punch him. When you're throwing punches, try to keep him at the end of your punches instead of breaking down that distance between you and him so that he can't grab you after he throws punches. And I think what Chad was trying to do, it looked like, was just trying to keep Bernard on the outside a little bit. So it's not going to look like it's not Chad is going to look like he's not doing as much because he doesn't want to let that distance between him and Bernard close, because Bernard is so cagey and smart. What he would do is, like, he'll hit you, right? Like, he'll throw punches at you and then jump in and kind of grab you, but he'll still be throwing punches with one arm, but he'll have your other arm, he'll have one of your arms all chicken winged up and hurting, and you try and get your arm loose, but he's still scoring, throwing punches. So Bernard, it's funny when you watch Bernard how cagey he is, even though he's old. But I mean, I don't know if it's Chad Dawson has a pretty long reach, so I don't know if somebody else is fighting him that doesn't have those same physical attributes, Bernard might still be able to dominate them.
So my thing is, how many fights is there left for him out there without, like, taking a step down in competition? And that's the thing. He's going to want to fight the best out there.
Well, Butte was his name. And it's like two more fights out there that he could take.
Is that a light heavy, or is that coming down a little bit?
Nah, he's not.
That's a light heavy.
Come down.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming down.
But it's kind of like BJ was saying, I don't think Bernard necessarily got dominated. That's why, I mean, he's 47. He probably should be retiring from this combat sport anyway. But I don't look at this loss and say, oh, he has to retire, because I really don't think he got dominated. He's just not as active as he needs to be against some of these younger active fighters. So, you know, you're not going to win a decision like that.
I mean, 117 to 112. He didn't get beat up, but he got, I guess from a boxing standpoint, he kind of got dominated, but he didn't get beat up at all.
I think it's tricky when you get older because your body, how it's going to respond. Go ahead, Brad.
And that was the first time that B-Hop man had no six. He had a little cut that fight. I was like, yeah, he can't. No matter how hard he worked out, when you hit a certain age, it don't even matter no more.
Man, he probably
he's still in great shape for a 47-year-old.
Yo, PJ, he went 12 rounds, yo. I couldn't go 12.
Yeah, I'm about to say, yeah, he in great shape for a 47-year-old, but the thing is, you're fighting 30-year-olds. So it's not, the gap is getting greater every year that passes.
He's
still
in great dancing
people,
shape,
so
he's not throwing no punches.
Yeah.
My man in great dancing shape. He can go dancing with the stars, man.
So what about this weekend? And please, y'all, let's not talk about Floyd and
about
and,
Cal
and
about
Manny.
Cal.
It ain't got nothing to do with that.
Yeah, we are
let me
not,
go
listen,
tailor
man,
the tape real
no
quick
drugs,
for the fight.
Man, we ain't talking about no drugs.
We'll talk about power.
Tailor the tape for the fight this weekend. Real quick, against Mayweather versus Cotto. Of course, May is 42-0, 26 knockouts. Cotto 37-2 with 30 knockouts. Mayweather's 34. Cotto's 31. Mayweather 147. Cotto 154. Mayweather 5'8". Cotto 5'7". Mayweather got the 72-inch reach. Cotto got the 67-inch reach. We already basically know, you know, their better wins, their top five wins, and all that. So we won't get into that. PJ, you can just give us the keys to the fight real quick, and we can all just throw out some predictions for the fight.
Yeah, I would say for the keys to the fight, it's going to be interesting. This is only the second time that Floyd fought at 154. The only other time he fought at 154 was against Oscar. So I still think that Floyd is going to be able to dominate him, just being Floyd Mayweather. Like, we've never seen anybody beat Floyd, so it's hard to say how to beat him. I think the chance that Cotto will have is for Floyd to make mistakes. Like, if Floyd pulls back, because I think regardless of how good you are, like I said, to me Floyd is just great as far as a boxer, but you can still get knocked out and you can still get hit. We saw Shane Mosley rock him and almost knock him out, so it's definitely possible for Cotto too, because Cotto is just that lunch pail type of fighter and he's a tough dude. Like, I mean, it's, but I just don't, I really don't think he has a chance in this fight. For Cotto, I think, like I said, I think he would have to catch Floyd making a mistake. I think Floyd is going to be in great shape. It's just, I just don't see him with a way to beat Floyd if Floyd boxes him in his sharp like he has been.
Yeah. All right, so what you got? I got Floyd.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I got Floyd. Let me real quick just – I got Floyd. I actually got a stoppage. I got Floyd beating him in the 10th round. It's going to be hard to stop Cotto because he has a lot of heart, but I got Floyd stopping him in the 10th round.
You know what
Cotto got to do, though? He got to protect himself at all times.
I want to say real quick, say no to drugs and up with hope and down with dope. But I think that it's amazing that Cotto has had the career he has with only having a left hand. Cotto doesn't have a right hand at all. If you watch him fight, he barely he throws the left hook. Like, he has the best left hook I've probably ever seen. But, yo, he has no right hand. He's like, I've never seen a fighter with one hand be this successful, but he hits hard. So he's
always
he's
an orthodox fighter, too.
Dr. J.
He's an orthodox fighter, which is interesting.
Yeah,
he's not a southpaw.
He's not a right hand at all, which is interesting. He's like the Dr. J of boxing. He only has one hand.
He got a hoof. You can't throw
him. He has the hardest left hook I've ever seen. But, you know, so he's going to have a puncher's chance. But, I mean, if I can see that just watching him, you know, Floyd sees it as well. So I guess he's going to make adjustments. And, you know, I'm just, you know, excited for this fight. I got Floyd in the decision. And it's probably going to be – I got Floyd in the split decision. It's going to be a little scared. Split decision for Floyd. I have him winning the fight. I'm just happy to see a drug-free, clean fight. That's all.
That's a little jab at Pacquiao.
I'm saying Cotto is going through the Olympic-style drug test, and he said, okay with it. He said, I'm a clean athlete. Now I fight you, you know, with the drug test. So shout out to Cotto for that. That's all I want to say.
Yeah.
Who you got, B. Austin?
Prediction? Yes.
Killio?
All right. Unanimously, Floyd.
Yo, man. I said a hero dies but one death. A coward dies every time he ducks and comes up with an excuse. So for every excuse, the coward. I got Floyd stopping him in 11.
You can't beat him. Join him.
Yeah, can't barely
say poetry over there.
Tito Trinidad,
yo,
man.
Yeah, yo, I got Floyd winning in the unanimous decision. There you go.
All right, that's.
I like to change my pick to Cotto. Change my pick to Cotto.
Why?
Man.
Why?
Cotto.
Why?
I don't roll with cowards.
Hey, Brad, you think he's that much of a coward, though?
You have to roll with a drug addict, though, right?
Brad.
Yo, DMX.
Brad, you think he's that much of a coward, though? You think he's that much of a coward?
I don't think he's that much of a coward.
We're not going to get into this. 20-minute conversation, man.
Yeah, I know. All right,
because to me, there's no way that Pac-Man is not on drugs. Yo, I watched the other day on ESPN. They had an Earth Pac-Man fight on.
Jimmy, come on. Jimmy going to try to stop y'all, and then he going to start instigating some more.
My fault.
Y'all know y'all can check out our website at warroomsports.com. If you want to call in and speak to us about any of tonight's topics, it's out of Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, press 1, and we try to get to you. We're about to talk a little bit about this these NBA playoffs, but first,
also sports cheaters.
First, I can tell you guys about Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, Android phone, or other smartphones. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is really easy. Just click on the Stitcher logo on our website and listen or download to your mobile phone directly from that page. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. All right, real quick before we get into the NBA playoffs, they named some awards, and I just wanted to get you guys' opinions on if these were, you know, won by the right people. If not, who you think should have got them. Well, first of all, before we even do that, y'all know the Bobcats fired Paul Silas, but they have promised him a position in the front office if he so chooses to take it.
He should fire Jordan.
He probably said, thank you.
Exactly. Like, I don't think it's much to talk about because I don't think this is a situation where the coach is even upset about being fired. So, you know, he was already gripping up players and stuffing them in lockers a few weeks ago. So it looked like
this was like a flip situation. He's thankful he got fired.
Mercy fired.
He started praise dancing.
The worst percentage, the worst winning percentage in NBA history. The worst
history,
right?
The Sixers team is off the hook. But it's always going to be an asterisk, like they said, because it's a shortened season.
Short season.
So they might try to make the argument, like, you know, full season, we would have got past 9 wins since we got 7 in the short season, but they still
full season. Silas would have killed them. Crushed them. Yo, the Fab Five or UNLV with Chase Young there would have crushed the Bobcats.
Yeah.
Now,
they had a shortened roster
because, like
ahead,
first round talent is different these days, so that might be possible. Like, I don't buy the whole Kentucky argument, but if you're taking it back to the Fab or the UNLV, I might buy that. I might.
I think UNLV because all of them dudes was like 25 when they was in school.
They was like 28-year-old freshmen.
For real. Yo, hey, the Razorbacks, 40 minutes of hell, 30 for 30. They were saying Larry Johnson, when they beat Todd Day and Lee Mayberry and them, Larry Johnson told Nolan Richardson, he was like, yo, coach, you need to go get yourself some men. And that's when he went out and got, like, Corliss Williamson in those chats because they was crushing them by, like, 30.
Yeah, it was like, if y'all can cheat, we can cheat.
We always talk about the reason that college teams can't compete is because of grown man strength. But when your college players already got grown man strength, I mean, like...
Yeah, it's a problem.
The thing is, Larry Johnson
don't
know how to use it.
All right, so the
Larry Johnson just didn't know how to use it, though. Go ahead.
True. The defensive player of the year went to Tyson Chandler, and the coach of the year went to Greg Popovich. Anybody disagree with those picks?
Yeah, I disagree because the defensive player of the year should have went to Tony Allen, because when he got inserted into the starting lineup, Memphis has been a better team ever since, dating back to last year in the playoffs. Also, I think Thibodeau should have got coach of the year, not just because I'm a Bulls fan, because we lost our whole backcourt for like most of the year, and our starters played together like 10 games, and yeah, we were winning with freaking Bronny Brewer, JL3, John Lucas III, and what's his name? C.J. Watson. Now, if Ted didn't get it, the cat from Indiana could have got it. I forgot his name. Indiana was supposed to be garbage this year, and they were third seed, so we should have went to him.
Well, he's good. I could see either way. I would have leaned towards Thibodeau, but you can't go wrong with Popovich Jarvis, because he did a great job with that Spurs team. But I kind of personally would have leaned towards Thibodeau myself, but I don't have a problem with Popovich. Him, the defensive player of the year, Tyson Chandler, I don't know. I kind of agree with Kill with that, too. Like, dark-skinned Jermaine is the major difference in that team if you watched him play through the course of the season.
Yeah.
It's tough to associate defense with the Knicks.
He got pushed on last night, though, something crazy.
Yeah. His hair got a little bit peasier after the dunk. But it's hard to, like, No, I was just going to say it's hard with Tyson Chandler, like, it's just hard with them, with the Knicks, to associate anything related to, like, top defense, especially with D'Antonio as the coach. But, I mean, I understand. I guess he's their only, like, well, him and Imam Shumpert, whatever his first name is, you know, it's not, they don't have too many defensive players on that squad. So,
I
don't
think
know.
They're
like,
rewarding him for his playoff run last year, for real.
Who,
Tyson Chandler. I think they still enamored by what he did with the Mavericks in that playoff run.
They treat it like an
As far as the coach go, I think Pop is who I had mid-season. So I'm definitely cool with the pick because I kind of think when people are used to you winning, I think that, you know, like we always talk about with Kobe sometimes, like people are so used to you doing something that they kind of forget about you. I mean, this is the second time he's won, but he could have won this award a lot of times, and I think this year is just as good a year as any other year because, you know, Duncan is not I wouldn't call him a shell of himself, but he's damn close to it. His team has gotten younger, except for the nucleus of, like, Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili. Ginobili's always hurt in and out of the lineup. But he just keeps plugging along, and out of nowhere, under the radar, this guy comes and his team takes the number one seed. You know, I think it's a pretty good pick. Like y'all were saying, Tibbs, I wouldn't be upset if he won or if Indiana's coach won. Everybody keep calling him Indiana's coach because nobody can remember his name. But,
you made a good point talking about unrecognized or whatever. This is one of his best coaching jobs with the team that he currently has.
And it's funny when you talk about Duncan, because when you watch him play, he's actually still a great player. He does a lot of things now in terms of, like, he's like one of the best screen setters in OD. He also guards the pick and roll better.
They just know how to hide him.
He does a lot of small things now that, like, that never get recognized. But, like, his defense on the pick and roll is better, like, especially coming from a Lakers fan. They haven't been able to guard the pick and roll for 30 years.
So, Jim, you saying he got good intangibles right now, like his intangible game.
He has out of this world intangible. I mean, he still put up like 13
So he like Tyrone Hill right now.
Yo, but
you know what,
like,
Jimmy?
Yo,
I just think
minus the goof move.
I think he just knows how to kind of hide Duncan and let him rest, you know, until basketball gets really serious. Like, we
he
might start seeing
some
Tim Duncan.
Let me talk about this other day. He got Steven Jackson ball. He's the only coach
in
the league.
I was just about to say that. He got Steven Jackson giving effort that doesn't include shooting jump shots. So
exactly.
That's
like,
that's
he does
do.
That. Oh, he's the only coach.
Not just jump shots, but slow jump shots.
And I a slow jump. My man got a slow Air McKee wind up.
Yo, he got
the
blue wind up.
His deltoid,
he
like
got
Aaron.
The blue wind
up. Bad slow.
I've personally been a Popovich hater because I didn't like the way he took the job. But you can't, like, his track record speaks for itself. Dude is one
hell of a coach. Hey, Jimmy. Have you heard Steven Jackson on Wax? His rap albums with his homies down in Port Arthur, Texas.
Port Arthur, Texas. I don't even want to hear it, man. Like, I really don't, man.
Where's Steven Jackson from? Steven Jackson from Texas?
Yeah, Texas, man. Yo, and his rhymes are gangster. Yo, he rolled with, like, nothing but gangsters in his rhymes, and, you know, he's about to kill you and do that, and they got the money and the girls, and, you know.
Kill. Do you not believe him?
Yeah, I know,
ask
right?
The fans
I mean,
in Indiana.
He has
the fans in Indiana. Ask the dude in that parking lot that he popped at. Do you not
he
believe
will,
him?
He will pop off.
Yeah, I mean, cats with those tendencies get found with a magazine. You heard what Jules told
me. He had an interview on YouTube saying that how other NBA players can't even go back home, how he's like one of the realest NBA players. You can go to any hood, wear jewelry. Other NBA players got to hide their watches. He's like, y'all know who y'all is. Y'all know who y'all is. Y'all scared.
Why does that even matter, though?
He's stupid.
He's still selling eight balls.
My defensive player of the year pick would have been dark skinned Jermaine, because I feel as though he has more challenges on a night in night out basis. And
he
then
got
I
challenges
thought,
with hygiene, Brad. He got worse challenges with hygiene.
And as far as him with relation to Pacquiao. There's another example of a guy that I mess with. Thibodeau only had his starting lineup.
What do y'all think about this series? What do y'all think about the Spurs
game.
Series? They got a really
so
big win.
So I
would have
went with Thibodeau. I would have went with Thibodeau.
Damn.
Damn.
Word. What do y'all think about the series? They got a real big win last night over Utah. Is this one pretty much going to be a sweep? Do y'all think Utah got enough to contend with these guys?
Last night, they beat the britches off them jokers.
He said the britches.
Straight up. That game, honestly, I think this is going to be a sweep, though. I just think, I mean, I don't know, it's funny because a lot of people didn't, I mean, well, I don't want to say a lot, but it seems like San Antonio just kind of been under the radar. And, like, everybody talking OKC and Miami and, you know, the Lakers, they getting it together with the you know, big men, but I don't know, man. San Antonio looks pretty viable to me, man.
Yeah.
But I think this series is probably going to be a sweep.
Yeah, this is probably
for Tyrone Corbin
for the second round. Well, you know, since there's not much going on in that series, let's go to Dallas and OKC. OKC is up 2-0, but both games have come down to the wire. Do y'all think that maybe Dallas, their chance may have gone by the wayside because they didn't steal one of those at home?
So how do you rebound from that? Like, you come that close. They technically should have won both of those games. Like, it's hard. I mean, it'll be amazing to see how they respond to that, but that has to be deflating from a mental standpoint.
That's exactly
what
I was thinking, Jim. Like, how do you go home? Like, you have the home court, and you look forward to that, but, like, a letdown seems like it's inevitable. Like, because you went so hard to stay in that game. they went so hard to stay in those games and just fell short right at the buzzer. It seems inevitable to me that they may win like game three, but OKC is going to steal one in Dallas, and because Dallas didn't steal one, that's going to put them in a bad position, you know, when it's all said and done.
But
they are playing like champs, though. We kind of dogged them earlier in the season, but they're playing like champs.
I want to ask Kill and Leroy a question since they're both in Texas. Have you guys seen Jason Terry? Because I haven't seen him. Where has he been? What happened to him?
It's game one. If you remember, game one he went like 8 for 9 and had 20 points, but he just couldn't get a shot off in the fourth quarter because Russell Westbrook just started face guarding him. But
even when he did that, it didn't even seem like his impact. Like he put up numbers, but like it's just different. Like last year,
Russell Westbrook is on him. Like Russell Westbrook, obviously everybody saw what he did to LeBron in the finals. So Russell Westbrook is like, yo, Terry's not beating us. So that's how it is. Now, I think the Mavs, I think it's going to go 7 because you know how the old adage, role players play great at home. So Derek Fisher's not going to have the game that he had these next two games. Neither is Serge Ibaka. Neither is Kendrick Perkins. So, you know, I expect the Dallas role players to step up, the OKC role players to step back, and Dallas to win two close games in Dallas.
Speaking of Little Mouth, you know, like I said, we kind of spoke ill of Dirk early in the year because, you know, he was taking time off to get in shape. But Dirk? He seemed like he's kind of hungry now, even though they're down 0-2. He's being a leader. He's being chippy. He's starting fights. He's starting fights and everything. Like, I mean,
that's what messing with them black women.
he got a little edge on him now. I mean, I know they would have. He would have got suspended, and the series would have been over. But I'm waiting for somebody to put Perkins in his place because.
He threw a little shoulder joint at Perkins in his chest, and Perkins' mouth got a little bit smaller. His nose got a little wider.
Get the ball with the shoulder, man. Clean in this
He's a sucker, man. But, Jimmy, your squad is looking kind of like a different squad lately. You know, the bigs are actually playing like bigs. You know, Kobe's getting those guys into the game. He's trusting them more. Yada, yada, yada. What do you think Denver's chances are to make this a series?
Here's what I want to say. A lot of Lakers fans got mad when I said this, but I honestly think that the difference is the fact that, and I hate to say this, but JaVale McGee versus Nene. Nene gave the Lakers fits. If Nene was in this series, we'd probably be 1-1 right now. But right now, JaVale is like no threat to Bynum, who's the best center in the NBA. So,
but there's
JaVale McGee.
But they're so undersized because they don't even start JaVale McGee. They're starting Fareed. And though hustling dude, he's just way undersized, man. There's nothing he can really do down there against Bynum and
JaVale. But he can't get a starting job.
Fareed like 6'7". Fareed like 6'7" with his shoes off.
You say your best player in a center in a league with really no talent at center for a backup?
I don't know. As talented as the little dude is, man, I still don't understand why Andre Miller isn't the starting point guard in Denver.
It's tempo, because they want to take advantage of that altitude, so they throw Ty Lawson out there, let him run up and down like Mighty Mouse, and tie their other team out, and then they bring in old school
basic. They can do that from the bench.
But Ty Lawson, like he's having a horrible series. You know what I mean?
Ty Lawson likes to go to the rack. That's going to be difficult against the Lakers, man. Yeah, I think LeBron just broke what's his name kneecap.
And my man Devin Ebanks is balling now. When Devin Ebanks start balling, you in trouble.
Do you think it'll do anything for chemistry negatively, or do you think that the Lakers will get stronger, PJ, when Ron Ron come back? Because Ron Ron ended the season pretty good before he started throwing bowls.
Yeah, before he started throwing bowls, I think he's going to help. I think he's going to be a plus to the team. I'm just intrigued by that position. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if nothing else, it's deepening the rotation. But I'm just enamored by the high-low between them two big dudes down there, man. Like, them two dudes with the passing down low, I'm like, they ignorant, man, because Gasol got a nice little drop-off game.
I'm just saying,
between Gasol and Bynum.
I think, I think they've gotten talent out, but I think they're contenders, man.
No, they better. Yeah,
no, Jordan Hill is balling too. Don't forget about Jordan.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They just all of a sudden, Jimmy, the Lakers just got deep. Because they weren't screening Jordan Hill when he first came here.
Jordan Hill.
I don't know why. It's not like they were running the triangle. They weren't running
the
triangle.
Jordan Hill's been treating another the same way he treats his women.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He got Brandon Marshall. He got Brandon Marshall in him. He'd be beating his chicks.
But this dude was a first round draft pick.
So everybody, I mean, we'll have to call a game, a number if you don't want, but everybody got the Lakers going on to win this series?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Hey, yo, real quick, Charles, before I sign off, yeah, I expect the Lakers to win that series. I expect OKC to win that series. I expect Utah to lose, and I expect the Spurs to win. And with that, I'm out, fellas.
All right,
yo.
Next week.
Let me ask you a question, yo. Jordan Hill was like a top 10 or 15 pick for the Knicks, and they traded him as a rookie. Who trades their like top pick like that? They trade him as a rookie when they just drafted him in the first round.
Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, that was Isaiah that made that move?
That was Zeke?
Case closed.
All right, you answered my question.
Has he been in the league how many years?
He's
only like a third year. It's like people forget he was a top like 10 pick.
I thought he was like a fifth. If he's a third year, then that might not be. That ain't an Isaiah Thomas thing.
Who trades your first round draft pick like in the same season? What you drafting for?
Yeah,
what they do.
Yeah, that's why they are who they are.
All right, so
they are who we thought they were.
This is a great series. This is actually the series I think is the best going on right now. Memphis and the LA Clippers. Series is tied at 1. I came into this series thinking that Memphis was the better team, and I still believe that. And game 1, they came out showing that. But the Clippers fought back from a 27-point deficit and actually stole game 1. They lost Caron Butler to a broken hand in the process, and then they lost last night. So how do you think this is going to shake out? Like, I think the bigs for Memphis are just way more skilled, and, of course, the bigs for the Clippers are way more athletic. And I kind of think skills is going to trump athleticism in this series when it's all said and done. What keeps them in it, though, of course, is the play of the point guard, Chris Paul, because
he's ridiculous.
Yeah,
he balling.
He just crazy.
He balling, man. And his effort. Like, we all know his skills, but, like, he's putting forth a lot of effort. And I guess some people try to lead that way by, you know, putting that effort out there, letting everybody see that, and hopefully everybody gets on board. But, you're right, though. This is a good series, man. Like,
Chris Paul plays like he's angry at his barber, and he should.
As he should. I want to give credit to Memphis because after that letdown in game 1, they came back out strong in game 2. And I was like, yo, if after you blow a lead like that, it has to be so deflating and tough to play game 2. But they got right back at it. And, yo, Duskin Jermaine is that dude because he doesn't put up crazy numbers, but his effect on the game just watching it. And I guess when you get older, you start to appreciate other aspects of the game as opposed to the scoring. When you watch the game, like his impact from a defensive standpoint and also just from even on the offense, like doing the small things like I talked about with Tim Duncan. Yo, he's like one of the most underrated players in the league. Darkskin Jermaine got game.
And it's been kind of infectious on that team because I've seen like O.J. Mayo D'ing up. And you don't, Exactly. Like you don't ever see him play D. And I'm like, you see effort. And sometimes I think just the competition, it's the competitiveness of like the series. Like with Chris Paul being tough and like making a tough face all the way up and down the court all the time and then strolling after he do something decent. Like sometimes other people take that personally and it makes them step their game up. So that's why I'm saying like I love this series, man. Like,
yo, think about
a lot of
PJ like
yo, my
Mayo,
man said I love this series. Like he's like an NBA commercial.
Yo, think about a dude like Mayo though. He has to come in and D up because he's playing behind he's playing behind.
Yeah, what's the name? The runner.
He's not gonna get no minutes unless you're gonna come in and at least try to do what he's doing. There's no reason for me to put you in the game. So
plus, I
want to
say
he can't score.
My man Lionel Hollins, man, he be wagging on cats. Man, he the best draft coach. He's like a pimp. We'll be wearing like suits on this job, man. My man Lionel Hollins, man. Give Lionel Hollins
the
coach of the year, man. Austin supports cheaters, though.
But let's go to the Eastern Conference and let's talk a little bit about the Philly Chicago series. I thought Akil was actually going to address that before he jumped off. I thought that was why.
Me
he
too.
Was
he ain't touched the East.
But
Akil ain't touched the East at all.
Okay, so
yeah.
In game one, it looked like the Sixers were going to go ahead and lay another egg in this series with minimal effort. But of course, the big news happens. Rose tears his ACL and his MCL. He's out for the rest of the season. Sixers come back the second game and kind of run the Bulls off the court in the second half. Before game two, Scottie Pippen wrote an open letter to the Chicago Bulls. Now, I have the letter in my hand. It's long as hell, so I'm just going to read the main quote. He said, yes, you lost one of your brothers, a warrior in every sense of the word, but I know, you still got a lot of fight left. You're still the best team in the NBA until an opponent proves otherwise, so go out there and play like it. I'm going to give you my opinion of this before we even talk about the Sixers, because this has nothing to do with the Sixers, but Scotty, don't have to lie to motivate the troops, because you're lying. I know they played well without Derrick Rose, but sometimes you can get in a certain mind state when you know that your superstar is coming back. You know, you can go for a little stretch, a few games here and a few games there, and play really hard, but when you know he's not coming back, like, the realness of this team is going to show. Not that they're bad, but they're not what they were. Like, this team is competing for a championship, and I no longer look at them as contenders. They might not be able to hold off the Sixers the way they played the other night.
I felt bad for D-Rose, but, like, yo, the kind of outpouring of, like, support he got, I felt like he passed or something. Like, one of your brothers... I feel like I'm about to play Call of Duty, and that's how the game comes on or something. Like, what are you talking about, one of your brothers is falling? Dude, you have players tweeting, man, you know, I'm so sad about D. I feel something like,
you know why? I'm telling you, this is all indirectly tied into LeBron hate.
Anti-Miami. Because
they're looking at him
Miami,
as he's the last chance that LeBron won't make it to the finals again and try to get that championship. So I really think this injury kind of cleared the way for Miami.
Yo, isn't it seem like everything's setting up perfect for them?
Yeah, it cleared the way. Dwight Howard's out. Not like they were going to be much of a challenge, but
who they going to play in the West?
It would either. I mean,
it could be any. It could be like
over there,
one
though.
Of four now.
Spurs, Lakers,
Spurs,
OKC.
West is tough.
Even Memphis might have a shot at it. But
my man Lionel Hollins might get them to the chip. You know what I'm saying?
Just off his
bench. The crazy part about it is, though, these teams that we're naming are going to be over there beating each other up while Miami's cruising to, you know, to take their spot in the finals, so they might be fresh and well-rested.
Yeah, that's true.
My man Chris Bosh had a baby today. Well, his wife had a baby. Maybe he had it. But
hey, Dad, he carried it for her. She had it.
they were questioning whether he was going to play it or not tonight, but he is there, and the Knicks are up 24-20 with 9 minutes left in the second quarter.
Yo,
Wayne Wade gunning and turning the ball over.
J.R. Smith is highly skilled. Why isn't dribbling one of the skills that he decided to pick up?
Yeah, because he just wants to score.
The worst ball handler I've ever seen in my life.
Well, look, we're here Carter. Anyway. So since we're talking about the Knicks in Miami, let's talk about the big story of the week real quick. We got a few minutes left, and we got a couple of series to get to. I mean, if we don't get the Orlando and Boston and them, then whatever. But after the last game that they lost, Amari Stoudemire, you know, the joke of the week is he finally decides to hit the glass. But it wasn't, you know, the glass that he's supposed to be hitting. He punches the glass casing of a fire extinguisher, cuts his hand all up, needs surgery, and is most likely out for the rest of the series, but for some reason they're not saying that. They're taking it game by game, but I think dude is done. First of all, how stupid is that? You know, I know it may have been a heat of the moment thing, but in some ways you can look at it as selfish. Like, you punch glass, you know there's a chance that something's going to happen.
Yeah, what bothers me is that they didn't show that kind of emotion during the game.
Look at the cornrows he has.
Actually, Jimmy, to his credit, though, he played to the end. And he was one of the only cats that did play to the end of that game. Like, he was still, trying.
He was.
Even though you knew that the game was over. So So I'm not going to knock him really for that, but the punch in the thing, like, come on, man. Really?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's just like, it's almost like selfish and just, you're just not thinking, like, you're just losing it. Like, yo, if you punch something, you need to punch something that is not made of glass, concrete. You need to kick over, like, some Gatorade cups or something more. You know what I'm saying?
You need to act tough while doing something soft. I mean, you need to act tough while doing something soft.
Right, exactly.
Go punch some curtains.
He played to the end, but that the emotion that it takes to, like, start hitting stuff on the wall, I didn't see that. Like, you know,
that could be a product of you thinking. Think about it. If you think, man, I'm the only one out here still trying, that could be a product of that. You know, he could go in there and be angry about that. So I don't know, but it was very stupid. Even though it doesn't seem like he and Melo and the rest of the team mesh too well, I still don't think they have a chance without one of these guys. And, you know, everybody out there is trying to make it a Melo thing because Stoudemire's not getting into the offense. He's only getting 9 shots, and Melo took, like, 26. But I don't think it's Melo taking his shots. I just think that the Knicks don't run through the low post. You know, whenever he is taking a shot, he's taking jump shots. So the offense is just not made for him.
Right.
Yo, Dwayne Wade is machine pistoler.
Yeah.
And turning the ball over in the process.
He brought his Mac 111 double.
Yeah.
So with Amari out, you know, there's some speculation that Jeremy Lin might come back maybe for game 4.
For what?
I don't think they're going to have the same kind of heroism of when he showed up the first time.
And I'm going to keep it real.
When he first showed up against the Miami Heat, that's one of the games where he first got exposed anyway. So this is not the series where he could play Superman. Go ahead, Austin.
I'm going to keep it real, and I appreciate all that Jeremy Lin represents and stands for. I think it's great. I like him. I think he's going to have a decent career. He's not better than Aaron Davis. He's not better. He's not better. He's not better than Baron Davis, man. He's not.
Well, you've been holding on to that. Austin was saying that when Baron Davis was hurt. Baron Davis was injured and fat, and he was like, man, he ain't better than Baron Davis. So, yeah, I don't know.
I think the Knicks are pretty much done. I mean,
I think when D'Antoni was there, he was better than Baron Davis just because of the style D'Antoni tried to run. But when Mike Whitman came over, I don't think
he was there because Baron Davis was busy eating fish fried rice.
I don't think he bought in to the allure, and I think he just treats him like another player. You know what I mean?
Yo, I got a question for y'all real quick. Why couldn't Big Baby play this well or this hard or show this much effort when Dwight was there?
Because he's probably thinking now that he's filling in for Dwight. I got to play harder. I got to beat Dwight.
Yo, I'm like, you know, not that he's a great player, but when you watch him play, like, he's going hard. He didn't play this hard all season. When Dwight was there, he didn't play this hard.
He didn't get the run.
He didn't get no minutes.
I mean, he started, he got minutes. He just didn't, you know, look like he was going through the motions. Like, you know what I mean?
Do and now with it's the
like,
minute. All right, so, well, speaking of that, Orlando stole game 1, but by all accounts, a lot of people are starting to take notice of the Pacers now, and they pretty much think now that the Pacers are 2-1, that series is probably just about done.
Look at Jared Jeffrey's hustle.
He's a bum. Do you guys think Orlando stand a chance? I don't even want to see Orlando go to the second round because, like, you know, what are they going to do?
For what?
It's more Miami Heat. People think anybody can give Miami a run, they want to go further.
Well, it's not going to be Orlando, so.
Yeah, it ain't going to be that.
Damn, shut up.
Miami could beat Orlando without Dwight by 100 a game.
Yo, Miami will beat, they will sweep the series in 3 games, even though it's a 7-game series.
We got a minute left, so, well, actually, we got like 30 seconds. Boston, that series is tied 1-1 with Atlanta. Ray Allen is still out. Rondo got suspended for a game, but Paul Pierce stepped up and did what he had to do. Josh Smith is suffering from
a sprained knee
or something like that. So this series could pretty much get interesting. So we'll keep an eye on it. And, Jimmy, you can just go ahead and what you do.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thanks for chilling and warming this evening, good people. Shout out to everyone who participated in our chat room, Facebook, Twitter, calling in. Shout out to all you guys. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to hear us discuss the hot sports topics of the week as only we can. You don't want to miss the fun. That is the war room next week. Guess what? We'll holler at you all week, all online. You know where to find us, warroomsports.com. Take it easy.
Word up.
Cash
take
rules
you
everything
on
around
joint.
Me. Cream, get the
here
money.
Here we go.
Dollar,
check
dollar bill,
this shit.
Y'all.
Yeah. I grew up on the crime side, the New York Times side. Staying alive was no job. Had second hand. Moms bounced on old man. So then we moved to Shaolin land. A young youth, you're rocking the go-to. Low goose, only way I begin to G York was drug loot. And let's start it like this, son. Rolling with this one and that one. Pulling out gas for fun. But it was just a dream for the team.
Dollar bill, y'all.